Double Stack F1 Podcast. You have Anurag and Shah here today to recap another exciting Australian Grand Prix. Not quite as exciting as last year, but somewhat the chaos was still there as usual. Shah, another one under our belts here from Australia. Good racing to some extent, different outcome than in 23. But yeah, what's your general take on what we witnessed last night?
Hello, everybody. It was a good Australian GP, I would say. It had the perfect balance of racing, strategy, everything there. So I think that made it an interesting race to watch. Very much worth watching it in the middle of the night. At the Eastern time, for most of the people, I would say. We didn't see another runaway kind of race, but it was still partially runaway race with one man having it under control.
Yeah, Sainz indeed had it fully under control. A smooth operation on the back of appendectomy or whatever you call it, removing your appendicitis.
Yeah.
Did great. Once again on a podium with Lando Norris, similar-ish podium to 2023 Singapore Grand Prix. I think the first 1-2 since 2022 for Ferrari. So pretty amazing here. Let's take a step back and kind of walk through the action by visiting the drivers as they exited the race, right from the back of the grid to the front this time. Let's look at the first guy up here is Verstappen. I think his woes started right off the bat. Second lap in, his brakes were kind of locked up, and he was driving on brakes that were where the temperature kept going up. By lap three, lap four, it became apparent, and pieces started falling apart. Fire erupted, and that was it for his race after four laps. Tough one. There was an uproar, right? Like people were kind of like cheering on when that happened at the bar. Saw some videos of like Australia people in the grandstands, like cheering on. I guess it was just an opportunity or the hope of another, like you said, not a runaway. But for me, it was kind of bittersweet because I was looking forward to that Ferrari versus Red Bull battle, and I think that's one thing we don't know yet whether or not it would have been a great race, even a better race if that stayed. So that's kind of for me the part where I'm a little bit sad that Max kind of exited the race. But you know. 100 you can imagine 10 scenarios, and the one you don't imagine is the one that happens. And clearly nobody had in their deck today a Max DNF. It's been quite a while. So yeah, that's my take on Max there. Not much, right?
Yeah, nothing. It's a shame that his 41 race streak has come to a halt, and then he's gonna have to build it back again. But yep, things beyond his control, just mechanical failures. There's nothing anybody could do. Unfortunate that it happened, and unfortunate we were kind of robbed of seeing the Red Bull versus Ferrari to a certain extent, I would say. I still expected Verstappen to have the upper hand, but I think there would be a close fight between them.
Yeah, could I think Sainz was pushing off the bat. He had, I don't know if that overtake was really because he had, Max is already struggling with the balance. Or the loose rear.
I think
the initial
corner Max lost his rear, and then he slid outwards, so he couldn't get a good traction, and that's how Carlos already had DRS and was able to get good traction and go through.
So who knows? We're not going to complain here today. The fans got something they've been waiting for, another winner, a different race. So let's not dwell on the fact that, you know, what could have been had Max been around, but it's worth questioning, right? That's all I can say there without lingering too much. Next driver to kind of like stop. I bundled these two together, although they were done at slightly different points in time. It was the Mercedes. The two drivers of Mercedes had a really tough afternoon. Hamilton, a few laps later, did his first pit stop, got rid of the softs after lap seven, and then I think by lap 17, he was out on engine failure. Nothing he could have done there. He had pace, undercut Tsunoda, was running around, I think, P7, making his way up the grid, potentially maybe making some more spots, but that's something we won't witness for sure. Another thing was Russell at the end there, penultimate lap, just crashed out. And that was kind of a controversial accident that ended up in the stewards and some penalties for Alonso. But yeah, what's your take on I don't know, Lewis's race, what could have been? I didn't see much of a balance. He was still struggling every once in a while into turn two with the rear of the car. Lawn mowing here a couple of times. Just what we saw the entire weekend, no balance at all. Yeah. for him and in that Mercedes. And then a slightly better race for Russell on the charge, where I thought the strategy was wrong was they kept him on that first set of hard a bit too long. Mm-hmm. They were hoping to go to the end with it, but ultimately all it permitted them to do was to have relatively newer tires to like do a chargeback, and it's on that chargeback finding himself behind Alonso and having to fight a wily old fox that doesn't give an inch and thinks outside of the box or you know while he's racing. So I think for me it's tough weekend for Mercedes, 0 points to take home. But and I don't even know if it's a promising for future races if there's anything they learned here in Melbourne. Yeah, I mean,
a double DNF always hurts a team, irrespective of when it happens or how it happens. But overall, as you said, the team, I mean, the cars and the drivers were lacking pace. The drivers were lacking confidence in terms of trying to push the cars with little to no traction and rear grip. That's more or less it. And then I hope that Mercedes fixes it. I think they've had a bad season start when compared to the previous year too. And we'll see how they move forward with Japan coming up and China before we move into the European leg. And in terms of the Russell incident, it's something that you wouldn't anticipate would have happened kind of thing. It has its two takes for, no, that's not his fault, that's his fault kind of thing. But at the end of the day, the data was presented to the FIA. They've heard from both the drivers and then came to a conclusion that it was a potential dangerous driving under their articles, which they've put in probably effective last year or the year before. Mm-hmm. And stated that this is something that led to this kind of incident. So we're going to penalize the driver. And you could hear different stories from the team. Aston Martin team itself initially started off with throttle problems, but then in the end, after the penalty was handed and then everything was out, they just said that it was part of racing, and then it was just something of a racing tactic, trying to slow down in a corner entry to get better exit speed. So the two takes is kind of where, I mean, why did they fall off of their initial throttle problems to the current reasoning that they were giving. It's just something slightly messier, but I don't think there's nothing more to look into. It's just happened. And Alonso was probably maybe trying to do a move, but did not expect the outcome to be at a scale where it might have caused a massive crash for what it did to Russell. It's a shame that the Mercedes team has to go through with rebuilding the car for Japan, check the chassis, because of the same place where Alex Albon also crashed earlier in free practice. So it's a whole lot of work for the team mechanics to look through. Yep. But overall, yeah, Mercedes wasn't really there in terms of pace during free practices, or even when the little time running that they were doing in. George Russell, too, he was having his own race. kind of thing not really there with the top McLaren and the Ferrari drivers are not really behind, are not really super fast over the Astons. It was just there inching slightly ahead of the Astons, and that's how they was trying to fight them and undercut them in the pit stop. So yeah, I hope they find some pace and then some setup for the upcoming races.
Yeah, need to find performance in that car for sure. Next up, Ocon and the Alpine. I didn't see much. It was he had two pit stops or three pit stops.
Ocon had three stops.
Yeah,
because I think one of his stops after his stint, he had a tear off stuck in his brake duct, so he was forced to pit a second time immediately. So that's how he had the three stops. If not, I think he could have probably been there in the points. But yeah,
yeah, his race was well basically done at that point. Next up, Zhou Guanyu. He pitted early from the softs. I think first guy to pit ish. Oh, after Ricardo, and then did his next two stands on the hards. Didn't see much of them. Didn't see much action coming from his end. Car doesn't have the pace. Bottas finished slightly ahead of him. Had another pit stop issue again this weekend. So I think for that team is to kind of figure out the equipment that they're using for their pit stop and kind of like reassessing that part of the weekend, because they've lost a lot of positions in the pits over the last couple races. So clearly they have a couple weeks to investigate what's going on here. So that they can come back and kind of have a better weekend in Japan next time.
Yep, that's the only highlight for the Kick Sauber team during the Australian GP was their slow pit stops. No on-track action. They were kind of out in the middle of nowhere, the tail end of the field with little to no pace, just chipping it away kind of thing. Yeah. I think Bottas had the same issue as he had, somewhat similar issue to what he had in the Bahrain and what the team had in Bahrain and Saudi with the wheel nut. Guan Yu Zhou, I think he had a gearbox issue. He came into the pits, got his tires changed, and then wasn't able to find the first gear to get in. And then it stalled, and then he had to refire it, find the gear, and then go in again. And then just there's fastest stop was a 3.8 second with no issues. So they still are having issues with the pit stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it eventually they would have to figure out what's wrong within their equipment, try to make some changes. I hope that the team is already on it, getting to the bottom of it and trying to make some improvements and changes.
Yeah, you're right. It's a fast sport, so you need to be fast everywhere on track and in the pits as well. So, easy fix there is to figure out what's going on in the pits. You can get a few tenths there or a few seconds even if you get them right. Up is Gasly, finished 13th. Gasly did, your classic two stopper, went long on the mediums, pitted a little bit later. And did his second stint, two stints on the hards afterwards. Finished the lap down. Not much to see. I don't recall seeing any on-track excitement from Gasly as well. Was there a battle? I think there was a battle with Magnussen at some point. Magnussen and him were going at it for a little bit, or is it with Zhou Guanyu? I remember just briefly, a brief battle where they were exchanging positions around turn. The 8-9 sequence there.
I think that was when one of the drivers came out of the pits.
Yeah. So, not much. Again, this car has been difficult to drive. Drivers really are just collecting data every weekend and hoping for performance to be added to the car, or shedding some weight and just like finding a solution to their lack of pace here. But yeah, next up, Ricardo. Ricardo, two stopper again. Started on softs, like Zhou Guanyu and Hamilton. Pitted relatively early, around a lap after Verstappen since then, and just made. Let's say he started 18,
P19, P18.
Yeah, finished 12. You know, recovered 12, six places.
Three DNF. No, you got you gotta count in the three DNFs.
But bar the three DNFs, I think he made very little progress. And that midfield's really tight. But at the same time, his teammate is doing fantastic, finishing P7. So, home race, not the greatest race. Did he have an issue though? I don't think he had any issues. Did he?
No issues whatsoever. He was he was just running his own race, head down with no mistakes, trying to get the gap closed down.
Yeah, but the tough part is when you're running behind someone. It's hard. You're losing time if you're running behind a car, even if you're faster than them. If you don't have a delta on them in terms of like even tire offset or engine or aerodynamic vehicle performance, like you're stuck. You're going at their pace until you know they pit or something. So I think that was to some extent something that held them back. Albon, it's hard to overtake Albon. So if you find yourself behind Albon, you're gonna have a pretty long afternoon. So that brings us to Albon.
Ricardo, it's just a general view. You see, with stable regulations, what happens is you get like really close racing. That's what we've all been talking about when the new regulations and the cost cap came in 2022 effective. And then we're like, you know what, 2024, 2025 would be the place where we'd see very close racing. That's kind of what we're seeing right now. But in the midfield, where it's like four different drivers are battling in for the last 2 point slots. Because you have the top four teams already kicking in on the first eight positions. It's like the last four teams trying to battle in for the two positions. So every single session or every timed session kind of counts. To make it count, when you take a look at today's finishing order and yesterday's qualifying order, you would see that yesterday's qualifying played a major role in how the teams got their strategies and then how they were able to go on race and then get their pace up and gain positions. So that's one thing I think that kind of hurt Ricardo's race was just this whole overall weekend, yesterday's qualifying, not being able to get to the top. Close to the top 15, I'd say. That's kind of what hurt his race.
Yeah, that's true. Tough home race, but Japan next, China, another track that suits him pretty well. So we'll see how he goes in the next couple of races. He does need to start showing maybe pace closer to Tsunoda or exceeding Tsunoda.
Exceeding Tsunoda is something that he needs. To get probably have a shot at the RB Red Bull seat.
Yeah. Otherwise, doesn't look clear right now at this point in time that he has a shot at the seat at all. Next guy up, Magnussen and Hulkenberg, P10, P9. I think they really controlled the race. They were really punchy. They benefited from others falling down. Did I skip someone?
Yeah, Albon? I think we want to do Albon. Yep.
Yeah, I skipped Albon. Good old friend Albon. You know, birthday was yesterday or 2 days ago. Inherited his teammate's vehicle. Luckily, he didn't have any accidents. Fought the best he could. Even with 3 DNF, just missed out on the points. But fought valiantly, and so there's nothing else I can add here. He did his best with what he had. Just as a tight midfield and just wasn't a weekend for Williams.
For Williams, you know? Team, I would say, yeah, overall. It was kind of a controversial call, but nothing, yeah, it had its fair share of controversies, people with it, against it, in terms of Albon taking in his teammate's chassis or his teammate's car for the race weekend. Rather than the team trying to give or put some confidence into their young driver, their new driver for the team, show him that, you know what, I have faith in you. It's we want you to succeed and that we want you to show us what you can. It's these movements that kind of make or break a driver. And when you take away this opportunity for them to shine, it kind of hurts them too. I hope this isn't something that kind of derails Logan Sargent's progress for the season. And then he's able to keep his head down, not get this to his head, and then get back into the groove of his progress and eventually match to Albon. I think it's two ways. Williams put themselves in this situation due to their lack of resources. And at the same time, Logan Sargent also put himself in this kind of situation in the first place. If only he was able to probably match Albon a little earlier and was able to show the team promising results, this wouldn't have happened. So yeah, it's two takes. So I think it was a difficult call for the team principal to make, but nevertheless a controversial for most of the people. Alex made the best he could, the best being trying to finish as close to the points or get the points without having any mistakes. So, yeah, he had a clean race and then he kept his head down. Kind of helped the team finish slightly higher in the ranking table, despite no points, because finishing order also kind of dictates where they finish.
Yeah, that's so, yeah, true.
That's it.
They did what he could. Let's move on to Magnussen and Hulkenberg. I think good hunting ground for them this weekend. They did everything right. I think Hulkenberg started P16. Magnussen started P14, they had three DNFs, moved them up that way, but they fought really hard against the drivers around them, against Albon, against Ricardo, against Tsunoda at some point, and they kept it clean. They had race pace, good clean pit stops, and were comfortably, I would say, top of that midfield pack, really the most complete package in the back there. So congrats to them. Double points. Let's keep it up. I think that's my take on Haas.
True. The new Haas, or the 2024 Haas, is a fresh breath of energy kind of thing. It's kind of good for us fans to see a team that's been struggling for a while and a relatively new team been struggling and facing questions about their position in the grid and then stuff like that, which kind of are trying to prove it and then make sure that they're professional and then they're up there making the best of what they could and getting some points. So it's pretty good weekend, I'd say, for Haas, and then it kind of boosts their momentum to get more into the next few races until the major upgrades start coming in.
Yeah, that's the other thing. You mentioned upgrades, right? They need to keep upgrading these cars. Otherwise, if the upgrades are similar to what they did last year, they're going to get, the other teams are going to catch up and overtake them on track. So the next battle for them is kind of maintaining this with good upgrades and consistent upgrades throughout the season. Upgrades aren't overrated. You just need to get the right ones onto your car and you'll benefit. So good job for now. Next up is Alonso. He technically finished. Did I skip you? No, Alonso P8.
Oh yeah, Alonso P8, yeah.
I think Alonso initially finished P6, right? And got 20 second penalty, kicked him back. I think he had a lonely race-ish, right? He was doing his thing. He's battling with Hamilton a few times there, battling with Russell. It's just it's back of the top of the first part of the field. That's where this car is sitting. I don't think he had really good balance this week. Stroll was able to kind of edge him a little bit, he tried to extract the most he could from the package. And I think he drives, like we touched on it already, he drives instinctively, right? And he has reflexes and he's always looking for the win. He's always looking to looking after himself. Like, I am in this car, I'm gonna try to position this car to get the best out of it. I'll do whatever it takes to get the maximum points, which is a good trait, but sometimes it leads to like situations where, like the one we had this weekend with just poor judgment. I think it's just slightly poor judgment on his behalf. Yeah. Not much to say. I think it's a tight field. It's really tight. So it's all about getting your setup right for that weekend and then maximizing your package every single time. Just know you can't sleep on your laurels for anybody, any team out there. Maybe Red Bull has a little bit of edge on everybody else, but everybody else behind the Red Bull needs to really push. And that includes Checo, yep, too. And Alonso and Aston Martin are clearly in this group of teams that really need to ace it every weekend in order to be competitive. So I think they did the best they could, just got involved in some drama.
Yep. Yeah. I think Aston was experimenting with two different strategies between their drivers. Alonso starting behind Stroll in P10. They decided probably for Alonso to start on the hard tires or everybody else starting on the mediums so that he could try to hold them back and then get some gap and take advantage during a safety car kind of thing, which never really happened. So they made the best that they could. His middle stint was slightly longer on the mediums, trying to see if he could try to get some pace over the hards. But given this weekend where everybody was, I mean, the entire Pirelli set of tires were steps softer than last year, that caused a lot of graining issues. So he really wasn't able to keep those tires in the optimal window for a long time to make the best out of it. And then, but he kind of forced Yuki to pit, but that in the end helped Alonso too. Yeah, he kind of undercut Yuki, came ahead of him, and then made the best of it, but eventually had to lose it with the 22nd penalty. But I think Alonso got a drive through penalty because of this thing, which was converted to a 22nd time penalty. And if I was Haas, given how Alonso finished, I mean, Alonso is now P8, and we finished behind a VSC car. And if I was Haas, I could try to probably go to the FIA saying, why is it only a 20-second penalty and it's a drive-through? It could be a 23-second because your pit stop window is 27 seconds or something. So if they try to add that extra 3 seconds or so, Haas could probably get an extra point or two because Alonso's penalty bumped Yuki up, giving RB 6 points and Haas 6 points as well. So they're tied up. Haas could probably try to see if they want to put in a petition with FIA saying why 20-second time penalty and why not more, and try to get an extra point or so they could finish higher in the championship, in the constructors.
Yeah, because if you're giving a drive-through, like I kind of, you're right in this, that the drive-through is going to take you more than 20 seconds to do.
Yeah.
So 20 seconds, you just got away, you know, with a few seconds and probably got to keep. Does that really affect them, though? If we went to 23 till Hülkenberg, because, Hülkenberg should. Yeah, it was 3.56 seconds to Hülkenberg. So, if you can get 24 seconds, I think you're right there. Five 4 seconds and you're golden. So let's see. I doubt they do it. They had a good weekend.
Yeah.
It's really unmerited. That's 9 and 10 is what they need. They deserve to be. So I wouldn't push my luck. And they cost money these days to position. I don't know. Rather use that for to get a part on the car and find performance that way, long term performance gain rather than a short term gain. But in the stewards room. You brought up Tsunoda, P7. Really great weekend for him. Kept it clean, did everything the right way. Control, fought well against Alonso, fought well against Lewis, fought well against anybody that came around him. He started P8, hoping he if he kept P8, that would have been a great win. I think benefiting from 3 DNF really helped him move up some more. I think he would have been P10 if all the other guys had finished. Good race. That's what happens when you position yourself. You keep it clean and you try to stay ahead of a train and you can run a clean race. But he did well. Good job from Tsunoda, demonstrating he is well ahead of Ricardo, struggling Ricardo, making Ricardo work for his money this year. So good job for Tsunoda.
Honorable person, I agree.
What?
Yeah. 100% agree with that. I think it was a very level-headed execution from UK this weekend. Nothing more to add on to that.
We saw a transformation from race one onward. After Bahrain and the drama in Bahrain, it's been a different Yuki so far, where he's been calm, collected, and just delivering on track. Really not just impressing on track. Like not worried about what other people think. Just doing his thing and doing it well. So quite impressed there with Yuki's performance with the last couple races. Lance Stroll, you want to add something?
Yeah, no, I mean, with just Yuki, with the change between first race to today's race kind of thing, I mean, given the backlash he received on the first race after his radio comments and his behavior. And then I think this is by far the first time that Yuki has ever been paired up with an experienced driver, I would say, when Yuki is also an experienced driver, because Yuki was paired up with Gasly, where Gasly was experienced, but Yuki was a rookie, so they let his mistakes go, and then his radio temper go away too. And then the second season, he was paired up again with Yuki. I mean, the third season, this is his fourth season, right? Or third season? I'm not sure.
Fourth.
So your first two with Pierre Gasly, Lanning, last season, Nick DeVries. So Yuki was kind of up there. Nobody batted an eye on what Yuki was kind of doing, but it was just more or less Nick DeVries' performance. But once he's been paired up against a proven driver who's been a good driver in the past and who's trying to be a good driver right now, the kind of people are trying to see everything and then trying to make two and two together to see where if one of those drivers is eligible for a seat within their team. So I think that kind of Yuki was made aware of it, and then maybe he's trying to put more effort into trying to calm himself and be more focused and getting the job done.
He's doing a fantastic job for sure. So far so good. Next up, Lance Stroll. I think it's similar to Alonso. They did the best they could, maximizing their package. I think we talked about them having two offsetting strategy. Just car needs to be in the perfect window. Drivers need to deliver. And overall, it's clean on Stroll's part this weekend. He kind of edged Alonso a little bit, or maybe it could have been he had a slightly better strategy with the medium hard versus Alonso's hard medium hard, and just being able to like, he finished right behind Alonso though, so Alonso ended up beating him anyway on track, but I think with the penalty he find himself ahead of Alonso at the end. But all in all, the car just needs more performance, just to get closer to the likes of the McLaren and the Ferraris and that front pack. Good weekend for them. Good haul of points. Not the start that they had last season with podiums all the time, but it's tougher this year.
I mean, with Aston, the first three races, I'm not entirely sure as to where they're lacking specifically in terms of their performance deficit with respect to the top three teams, I'd say, with respect to the teams that are in front of them. Because sometimes, I think it just varies between sessions and sessions. You see them doing good in qualifying and you don't see them doing good in race, or you see them doing good in the race and not in the qualifying. And then different sessions within qualifying itself also tends to affect them. So I think it's like very minute changes. It's like super sensitive, I would say, their car with the upgrades that they're bringing in or with their current car package. I'm hoping that they're able to get those under control and then find performance.
Yeah. That's for Aston Martin. Well, yeah. I saw something in the news, maybe this is a side note. Is there a consortium buying McLaren or is it Aston Martin?
So, I mean, McLaren has two divisions kind of thing. I mean, you have the McLaren Road Car and you have the McLaren Racing. McLaren Racing CEO, Zak Brown. McLaren Racing is the only profitable venture they have. And McLaren Car, which was partially owned by the Bahrain Group, is completely bought out by Bahrain Group right now. That's what happened. So the McLaren Automotive Cars or the Road Car section has completely been bought by Bahrain. And then, we'll see quite a lot of changes in terms of what they're going to do. Definitely a McLaren SUV coming up in the future, for sure. Lamborghini did that. Ferrari did that. Now, next McLaren is going to do that.
Cool. All right. That's on the car side of the business. Perfect. Paris. Now, Paris. Paris. I was expecting more from Paris. Same. I don't know if I'm the only guy here. Just didn't see any pace from him. Stuck behind Russell at the beginning for quite some time.
I think he was making decent progress, and then he just he passed Alonso, and then he wasn't able to fend off Alonso, and then the gaps just stayed there. I'm like, what's happening with him?
So, yeah, for a weekend where you would expect Red Bull to kind of in Verstappen's hand to kind of at least edge a podium and a win, you would expect Perez with the same package, and he looked pretty hooked up all weekend outside of getting the penalty that took him back a little bit. But I didn't see that penalty as like a race destroying penalty. Like he started P6, finished P5, like, and there's three DNFs. One of them for him, but maybe one or two of them mattered for him, but like he was still going to finish P6 then if Verstappen was around.
True.
Like, what are we doing? Like, there's no progress. I don't understand what happened to his race, but I'm pretty shocked though of the outcome.
I mean, if you take a look at the first two races and his results, I mean, Bahrain, it's a high deck track, but the tires were the right for that, and then they had the optimal strategy and pace. For Jeddah, a low deck track, so you had little to zero tire management. You didn't need to put more focus on tire management, so it was just purely pace. So he was able to get that done. So when you come to Australia, new tire compounds, different tire compounds, higher graining. So I think he had to focus more on the tire saving aspect of it too, which I think is what Checo is struggling with the Red Bull cars in terms of tire saving. Because when you take a look at Checo's performances with tracks that have less tire deg and which are optimal for the car itself, he's able to maximize the results. But when there is tire saving, I don't see him performing to the extent he should be when compared to while having the fastest car on the grid. So I think that's where Checo is kind of struggling with respect to the Red Bull, is trying to preserve his tire life and maintain it so that to make the team's strategy work.
Got it. That's interesting.
My take on it. I'm not sure how true it is.
Yeah, it's a different angle to it, but I respect it. But it's just, wish he could have done better. Piastri and Norris, P4, P5, different strategies, one driver.
P3, P4,
P3, P4, different strategies for both drivers. Norris clearly looked like he had better pace with slightly younger tires at various point in time. But the performance by the Aussie at home, and hopefully, we continue to see them fight for podiums in the next few races. Other than that, they couldn't get close to Leclerc, really, in the chase. It didn't seem like Norris had the pace to get Leclerc. But all in all, good haul of points, good performance, kept it clean, and And yeah, we're going to another track that should suit them again in Suzuka next time. So
yep,
expect them
it's actually
well there.
True. I mean, it's a pretty good weekend, I'd say, for McLaren. Maximize the best they could.
Yeah.
There was a potential P2 on there for Lando Norris, I would say. Oscar undercut Lando, and then the Lando pit, and then the VSC came in. Mm-hmm. So that's something that kind of put the gap a little larger between Lando and Oscar. And then at that stint, even you could see that Lando was clearly half a second faster.
Mm-hmm.
Let the team swap them. And then you could also see that Lando was closing in the gap and then forced or got close enough to Charles to force him to pit. And then you had Oscar pit too to cover off Charles's undercut. And then Lando Norris pit. I think where Lando Norris's P2 fell off was when he was, or when where his P2 chances kind of fell off is when him and Sainz were just going in. And then there was only a 3-second gap. And then you had Leclerc and Oscar fighting in the back for P3. And then they had Leclerc to cover Oscar. They should have done the same with Norris as well, rather than having him go a little longer, because they thought they had a shot at trying to catch Carlos Sainz or keep him at his bay. But then quickly they realized that it was wrong, because Carlos Sainz within a span of 4 laps made the gap to 8.5 seconds, and then Lando was just there. So he lost out to the undercut for Leclerc and Oscar, and then he had to fight it back. And then the last stint again, there he was trying to close the gap to Leclerc, but you have traffic lap cars when you could see the onboards. 2 or 3 cars just stopped, just kind of in the wrong time, wrong placement. But overall, a good race, I would say, and good pace for McLaren, promising pace. Next track, Japan, is actually a really good test track for them to see how much they've progressed between last year's Japan, which was at the tail end of the season, so they already had their upgrades, to this year's Japan, which is early in the season, so winter break upgrades, so they'd have a real-time comparison to see how much of progress they've made with respect to other teams and with respect to Red Bull.
Yeah, looking forward to Japan for sure. Seeing what McLaren.
One other stat. I might be wrong on the stat. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to check. I didn't check. I think Oscar Piastri might be the highest finishing Australian in an Australian GP, if I'm not mistaken, P4.
Then,
was there any Australian driver that finished on the podium? Daniel Ricciardo, never. Mark Webber, no. I don't think so. Did he?
I don't know off the top. We have to check that. But I'm not a Australian GP stat guru, so please check that. Oh, not sure. I won't commit to commit to that. I know post-mortem, Ricardo lost the trophy at his home race. He was actually on the podium, so that one I remember. And then he lost the place after the fact. So not sure, I'll accept it for now. Let's just put it that way. Good for him. Next up is the Ferrari boys 1-2. Really capitalized on the DNF from Max Verstappen. But Sainz kept it clean. Leclerc couldn't catch him. Tried all he could, just was lacking in pace. Carlos had really, really strong pace this weekend, controlled the race effectively. And all worked out for him. And great procedure all in all. And good to see him win after what was a really tough race in 2023 for him. I believe he had a penalty, finished outside of the point, and it was just a messy race for him. I still hearing him, begging Ricky to kind of call the stewards and have them listen to his side of the debate, whether or not he caused the incidents with Alonso at the time. But good return from hospitalization here for him and good outcome. So happy for Sainz, and hopefully we get to see the Ferraris like fighting more at the tip of the spear over the next couple of races. And you know, it was good to see another winner, and Carlos does it again.
Yep, definitely. Yep, Carlos was on pace this entire weekend, I'd say, or more from qualifying onwards. He was clearly the fastest driver between the two Ferrari drivers. He had a very clean race, textbook execution. Just up there in the front, little to no mistakes, keeping his head down, lap after lap, just getting the strategy right, and then making use of the team's calls. Charles Leclerc too. Yep, I mean, I believe Charles Leclerc himself has mentioned that at no time was he in a position to try to battle with Carlos to get the P1. Anytime he was trying to be behind Carlos within the gap, he was already struggling with his tires. So he was closing in for his next pit stop.
Yeah.
So it's overall a pretty good weekend for Ferrari. I mean, the best weekend they've had in a while. I'd say maximizing the points, 46 points, I think, that are available for a team to score, and inching closer to the constructors. And that's pretty good, I'd say. Nothing more to add on. Ferraris are closing in on Red Bull. We just don't know how much closer they got to, because we weren't able to compare it to the Verstappen, the front runner for Red Bull. But hopefully we'll get an opportunity to see how they fare in Japan.
Yeah, Japan's it's another interesting track. I think I expect Max to come back with a vengeance here and just blitz the field. I would not be surprised if that happens in Japan next week, in a couple weeks. But fans will enjoy this for now. GP rating, what do you have here?
You want to go first, or should I?
I'm happy to go. I think I give this race a 7. Because there's a lot of question marks in terms of what could have been if Max was there. Although Max wasn't there, I think strategy was good. There's a lot of strategy up and down the field, which is a plus. But and then it just felt like nobody really put pressure on Sainz after Max left. Really, nobody got really close to challenge him, which was a little bit... it wasn't exciting. It wasn't that exciting in that regard. And then up and down the field, there was a lot of action. There's really a lot of action up and down the field, which kind of offset that a little bit. So yeah, not an amazing race. A lot, just 7, I think, is appropriate here. It's not an 8 or 9 or 10 banger here for me, at least for me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much more or less on the same page. 7.5, I would give it. Pretty good race. I mean, if you're a Carlos Sainz fan or a Ferrari fan, it was a very exciting race. If you were just looking for the action and seeing what's going on in the overall picture, 7.5. We had everything that could be given to us in terms of racing. Close midfield, battling it out, clean racing. Just besides barring that one incident, but I think everything else was pretty much what we could expect from an Australian GP.
Yeah.
Not the crazy that we got last year, but similar recipe with just toned down ingredients, I'd say.
Yeah. Albert Park really delivers in terms of like fun races.
Didn't they make changes to this track layout for this year, or was it last year that they already made the layout?
Yeah, I think it was last year or 2 years ago with the DRS and no more chicane around turn. It was a chicane around turn 7 or 8, weird chicane in the middle, flat out section. And then they added an extra DRS, makes the lap times just crazy. But yeah, it was fun. There's a lot of overtakes into turn 9, 8, 9 sequence. You remember that was
yeah,
cool.
The double DRS. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You got people going from the outside, doing overtakes from the. It was good to see. People were able to try it and then really pull it off there. So it was all in all a fun race to watch, but there's been better. We've seen some crazier races. That's it for today, really. I didn't do a preview show this weekend, but I had thought about a classification. I had Verstappen to Leclerc, to Sainz, to Perez, Alonso, Piastri, Stroll, Norris, Hamilton, and Russell. But as you can clearly see, I'm already three wrong from the onset. So no need to dig in there any longer. But yeah, good for tuning in, and we'll catch up for the Japanese Grand Prix next in a couple weeks.
Yep, it's more or less within the same time as the Australian GP, just an hour later. But we have the next two races, Japan and China, are midnight races kind of thing. Saturday night, late nights. Well into Sunday afternoons.
It's gonna be tough. But we're ready for that. We're ready for it. It's that part of this. It's good that it's all geolocalized somewhat now. So we'll just go through that period of just like late night F1 races, and then we come back to the East Coast for a couple races, and then go back to morning races for
the Europe. Yep.
And the
9 a.m.
The European legs. Kind of fun. That's a fun leg of the season. But enough chit chatter. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the other side. Peace.
Yep. Thank you, everybody. Peace.